This is the Radio Check Podcast, life in the concert touring industry.
Hello, Brother Chris.
Hi, Matt. Good day to you.
Good day to you as well. How are things?
You know what? I really wish I had a different story for you. You know, it's you know, what I call it, the last podcast, I call it Groundhog's Day and Everyday Sunday. But, you know, I don't have any new ways of describing how my days are just blurring from one to the next. And, you know, I you know what? I try to find that little interesting thing that I can do every day. So at the end of the day, I can go, okay, great. I got that done. You know, I cleaned my toilet today. Fantastic. I got something done. Or, I got a little more exercise in, or maybe I went to the grocery store. But, you know, those stupid little things of positivity that you need to take away at the end of the day so you can go to sleep and not want to, you know, smash your own head in, you know, that kind of thing.
I hear you. On those kinds of days for me, I try to set out to learn something new. And it could be mindless and stupid, or it can be something actually somewhat insightful and useful. But you know, I know that it's not been too long since we last saw each other, so there's probably not a whole lot to catch up on. But today is going to be this. These are just, I don't know. It just seems like each one just gets better and better as far as, you know, what I'm looking forward to anyway. So
We might be peaking today.
I don't know. It's possible because this individual, I've heard his name probably for the past 20, 30 years, just in the background, but I've never met him. So this is exciting. And I'm really looking forward to this. So, but I know you're good friends with them and stuff. So hopefully this will be another, you know, organic conversation. So, but bring it on home, man. What's going on?
Wow. You know, I've been teasing that I've wanted this guy on the podcast for a long time, and I hinted to him a few times, but you know, this really isn't his thing. I'm thinking, you know, maybe we don't have enough cred. Maybe he won't want to do this, but you know, I think, you know, he said yes. And so here we are. Coming from Phoenix, Arizona, Mr. Dale Opie Sirsheth. How are you, sir? Welcome.
Great. I fixed my toilet today. So.
there's your sense of accomplishment.
Yes,
for the day.
Yes. Fixed my toilet. Yesterday, I got a remote working.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
I got that working, and I fixed my flush seal on my toilet that started running in the middle of the night.
That's a good one because you're not only doing something constructive, but you're getting rid of an annoyance.
Oh yeah. And funniest thing happened today, of course. One of the jobs emailed me and asked me a bunch of information and stuff. So I've actually been busy collecting stuff for some people today. So I was like, nothing's happening. Everything says if next to it. So I was like, okay, this will be fun. You know, hey, my day has gone by. You know, I try to make it till about 11 or 12 before a nap and then go work out. It was senior day at the grocery store. So I got a big discount today. Every first Wednesday of every month is senior day. So
what do they consider senior? You're my age. You're
50,
not senior.
55. 55 or 59, but they in the state of Arizona, they call 55. I went and I was cashing out. And the lady goes, how old are you? It's senior day today. And I said, well, I'm 59. And she said, oh, it starts at 55. So I got a big discount. So that was a while ago. So I've been working on that.
Well, you and I are exactly the same age, and I am not considering myself a senior.
No.
I say, take that discount and you just hold on to it.
I'm using it. No. I go early enough to beat the seniors that are there because they start bumping you in the cart, you know? It's like, no. So and I brought all my coupons and got my big savings. So that was good.
Funny. Yeah. Well, hey, so, you know, it's been, you know, 14 months or so. At the beginning of this, you know, we had no idea how long it was going to be, but we knew it was going to be a while. Did you set any goals for yourself? Like, you know, I'm going to learn Spanish or vector works or learn to play the guitar or anything like that. Did you set any goals for yourself or you just?
Well, the worst part is the good part is we remodeled in 2019. During our remodel, we emptied the house and nothing came back in. So I already stripped it. So we've already gotten rid of the junk. We already had the dumpster. We already had everything done. So my goals were just to stay at weight and, pay attention to everybody that's out there that I work with and keep an eye on guys, and took that time and just made sure people got on all the programs that they could with the governments.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of us didn't want to touch unemployment. I didn't. And then I said, screw it. You know, I got on the PUA and got a bunch of other people. A lot of people got it, you know, and that once they start doing it, they start figuring it out. So that was my goal over the, over this, is helping people out and had,
yeah,
not just touring people, but there's, you know, we know all sorts of people, my Pilates instructor, our dog sitter, you know, masseuses that didn't know what to do, you know, because they've never done it. So we got them hooked onto the PUA here, which in Arizona, I got to say, has been fantastic, the unemployment and all that. So I got that down and passed that out to all the crew that I know.
Nice.
You know, got everybody put your honor down. And because at a point I said, you better be ready to brace down for 18 months.
Right.
You know, it's not looking good. Once we started seeing it, it's like, we're going to roll into something and be prepared. You know, like everything my dad taught me, be prepared for the day you're done.
Yeah, so, exactly. I mean, a lot of guys are doing what they have to do. You know, I have carpenters that work in grocery stores or work for Amazon or, you know, do whatever, you know, and, you know, I don't want to say it breaks my heart, but it kind of breaks my heart. But, you know, it's, you know.
The benefit of the people in our business, they're survivors, you know, most of them have an education. Mine is high school, barely scraped by, you know, but had the drive to survive. And so when crisis came in, same with all the guys I know, they're all doing stuff. They're all doing something, odd jobs. Some guys that went to work at stereo companies, you know, home installations and all that good stuff.
Right. So, smart houses, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah. So a lot of guys, you know, Andy O lives here, and he's been working his tail off at with Brent Silverstein, doing all that stuff, you know. So he just finished up that global citizenship or whatever it is, global thing in LA, and then he works for Brent and does testing around the state. Mm-hmm. He sets up little test camps. He sets it all up, puts cones in, puts all the stuff up, and then he goes away. And he's got a few guys there working with him, and
Chuck Beckler and all those guys, they all jump in and kind of work all that out. Yeah, it's really admirable. Yeah. Really admirable.
You know, it comes with our DNA of what we did, you know, not just family DNA, which is a big thing for everybody, is just, you know, it's our DNA of our industry and the people we worked with and the motivation, you know. No one, there are probably some guys hurting and I feel for them. And I feel that, you know, it's like, I just want to take, as soon as work comes, I want to go to work for people and get people working.
Yeah.
That's my goal, is to get people working again. You know, me, I'm not worried about, like you, you know, we've taken care of it. We're at our age, you know, I've done what I needed to do, but I want to work for my guys. I want to get a job and put a bunch of people on it. So,
yeah, man, I totally get it.
So, you know, it's, comes with all of what we do. So it's in our position, you know, that instinct of, you know, people don't realize if we're not working, you think of your numbers, you know, that one year I was doing four tours, you know, 500 people working that I got out there working, you know, which is great. Vendors, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. So
it does.
But
you and I are, you know, we're the same age, you know. We've both been doing this since we were kids. We're both wearing we're both wearing glasses now.
Yeah, I got to wear them to see you guys.
But you know, we both kind of, you know, our young paths were similar. We both started working for local club bands, you know, doing whatever, kind of learning what it was all about, whether it would be, you know, running the snake or, you know, unloading and loading a truck, driving the truck.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we followed kind of a similar path, you know, and you started in lighting once you started doing proper touring, right?
Right. I started my full background, and like any of us, it shows what your DNA is and where you come from. And when we started in clubs, and of course I know I did, and you probably did too. I just lied. Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. You know, in 11th grade in high school, I started hanging out with this guy, Mojo Buford, the summer of 79, and he was a harmonica guy. So this guy's house that I used to hang out with and do stuff, and he lived next door. And he played with Muddy Waters.
Wow.
So he played around town. So I would go with him and be his roadie, and he'd teach me how to play. And as my senior year of high school, he's like, dude, you got to go finish school. I showed up one day and he goes, what's wrong? I go, my dad yelled at me because I'm failing. He goes, you go back to school, finish school. This will be here for you. And when I graduated high school, the guy that introduced me to Mojo introduced me to another band. And I just volunteered, Daisy Dillman, and they worked the circuit, you know, the five states. And we played all the ballrooms and all, you know, the clubs, the dumps, all of that. You know, you played them all.
Yeah.
And the good thing I had when I started is everyone I started with was older than me. You know, probably with you too. All they had some experience, and they'd kick your ass and they'd yell at you. And they'd also take the time of making sure you do it right. You know, I didn't know what a par can was. I didn't know what a 500 watt is or 1,000 watt, or an ACL versus that. They all pretty like to tell the new guy to put his hand in the back of the ACL.
And spin the bulb. So, yeah,
AOB?
So I, yes.
Yeah, just curious. Where were you? Where'd you grow up? Where's all this?
I grew up in Hugo, Minnesota. I grew up. And believe it or not, we had a big club out there called the 61 Club. And that's where I met Daisy Dillman guys. And it was a part of the circuit. It was a big ass club. And a lot of ballrooms in that area, that Midwest area, you played, you know. And funny enough, like Rocky Holman and Cubby and Hoss Kiefer and Tiny, who works at the Claire office down in Nashville, Willie O'Brien, all these DB guys. I met Harry Witz in like 1981. You know, they came down and met with, you know, because a lot of these guys went through the circuit of this band. You know, they grew through this band. And so they would come and kind of farm you, you know, and check you out. So,
yeah. Did you have the 24 foot bobtail with backline, a small stackable PA, and some par cans and a crank up truss? You know, I mean, exactly my life.
We had four poles, you know, the tripods, boom, push them up, boom, you know. But I got to tell you, this is where these guys taught me. They built all their cases to fit. So to me, I was like, that's thinking. And working with these guys, I was like, does anyone call the venue? You know, because when you started riding, because I volunteered help with them and I worked with these guys and they started paying me $100 a week later on. But I was like, does anyone call ahead? And they go, no,
because they're coming.
Yeah, they know we're coming to load in. Their door's locked. They go, well, we send them a rider from the office. And I'm going, what's the rider? What the hell's a rider? And it was like a 3-page thing they showed me. And I go, oh, okay. So I got a hold of the guy. Moe Iglesias was the booking agent and the manager. And I got the information for all the clubs. And I would sit at home, at my parents' home, and call them and say, we're going to be there about, you know, 3 p.m. Can someone just be there? Yeah, we can be there. And I'd ask for the stagehands that were on there. They'd laugh. Who do you want? You know. And after a while, it was just basically, can you put a shoe in the door, a stick in the door so we can get in? Because they'd be like, you know, and they did. But they appreciated the call.
Yeah.
You know. And
but now we know what time you're coming.
Yeah. I mean, we did our own power back then. Remember doing your own power?
One hand in the box.
And then someone stand there with a stick to hit you if you get zapped. I was telling
My screwdrivers were missing the tips.
Yep. Because you go.
Because you're tying in live. You're not shutting the power down in the building to tie in.
You're holding it one handed and the other hand is sticking out. And then the guy's sitting there with the broom handle to hit you. You know? Like, okay.
I've been knocked off a few chairs those days. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and then I got smart and we ended up getting breakers. So I would put my tails into a breaker and then put them into the panel, you know. So
right. And you got into ingenuity, you got things going and stuff and so we worked with this band for a while. I did for 2 years, and a lot of people came to them, like I said, with Rocky Holman. They'd come down and visit. Rocky was doing Molly Hatchet back then.
Wow.
You know, in the day. and Rob Colby was out doing prints. And so all these people would come around because they all followed him around. There's Chameleon, Daisy Dillman, all these bands. You know, Tim Miller's from that area too.
He worked really? Out
yeah, yeah, yeah. And then Tommy Bolin, Johnny, his brother, played in a band also in that area. So
Tommy Bolin from Deep Purple and
yeah, and yeah, you know, his brother Johnny. They're from Iowa. We would go down there and, you know, see Johnny, and he played drums in this band that we would hang out with. But we worked the circuit, you know, you work the circuit, you meet people. And then as you meet them, we do the, I don't know if you did the NECAA convention or whatever. You go play these conventions. These guys would explain to me, Larry and Skip, who were on the Daisy Dillman guys, who brought me in graciously and taught me stuff. They were much older than me. Still alive, still keep in touch, which is great. And they said, we're going to do this convention in Chicago. You go to Chicago and you get 11 minutes to play. But 11 minutes includes getting on and off.
So, with equipment, like your set equipment. Change.
Yeah, your set change. So as you Mike know, King, later on in life,
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
With Ozfest. the goal was, is you get, in the audience are all the college entertainment people, bookers from the region, and booking agents for headliners like Michael Murphy at the time, Ozark Mountain Daredevils, Charlie Daniels, all those guys were there. And I put wheels on my drum riser and I fucking keyboard riser. And we had, and we rolled out and just told them, fucking play, you know? Because it gets you out of the clubs. Gets you out of the clubs and you can go do college things and meet college girls and go to the parties afterwards. And once in a while, get stagehands to load in, never to load out.
I never saw a stagehand in the first, you know, five, six years.
They weren't even stagehands anyhow.
I was the stagehand. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But you get some people to push boxes for you and then they disappear and who cares? Course, and maybe get a little food and a party. And,
Now I get it, Chris. That's what you dragged me in for, to be your roadie so I could put it in that cable.
Come learn how to do it. Turn a butterfly latch.
Exactly.
Hey, so let me ask you this. How many people per a hotel room?
Oh, there. It depended how many there were of us. You know, it'd be one room. And so let me say this to the convention. We got on the circuit, and the band that I worked with had a Scenic Cruiser bus. So the band would live on the bus and they'd shower in the room and they had a trailer. So when we did Big Circuit, we'd venture further out, but we had a rider truck, we had a 24 footer with a sleeper built into the box. He climbed through the hole and had wood bunks in it. And we slept in there. Yeah. 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 These guys were pretty, that's what actually made me think, you know, you got this, you got that, you know, that's cool. And so we got on, here's one. So after the convention, we got on the Ozark Mountain Daredevils tour, which was fantastic. And John Aiken was the guitar or the backline guy. And I was backline guy. I was the backline guy, and John is the backline guy. And this is where these guys also taught me, get on, get off. Make sure you know, whatever you can do to help out the headliner, do it. You'll get stuff, you know, and this and that. And it worked. I showed up when they showed up. Stan, you know, Stan from Lighting Stan. He did Ozzy with you, I think.
Stan Crocker.
Yes. He was on the lighting crew. I think he was the only crew. He was he worked for Eclipse Sound and Lights, and he was on the lighting crew. And me and him hit it off right away. And Willie O'Brien or Willie Reese was on the sound crew. And they had one other guy. I think there were three of them, you know, this kind of sound monitors, lights, in front of house. And I just came in and started helping them out. Didn't care. Just fucking helping them out every day.
Because you loved it. You gained a passion for it early.
Yeah.
Started off with love of music and then the love of the process, you know, because I never wanted to play an instrument. That was never my thing, but I was always fascinated with the process. And when I went to concerts, I would try to stay in the building after the show.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of watching what the activity was, you know.
Until you get kicked out.
Yeah, until you get kicked out, you know, because the mayhem started immediately, of course. The house lights go on, people are everywhere. Well, what's going on? What are they doing, you know?
Yeah.
very keen. So you got out of that. How did you eventually, was it show lights you started working for?
Well, how did that happen? Back to Daisy Dillman, I hooked up with Sean on, I worked for a sound and light company, learned a bunch of shit in between. And then I worked for, there was guys that played in Daisy Dillman that went to work for Sean on up in 82 is when I left. 82, I think that's when my first Sean on up tour was. And I went out as the back line guy. And I needed to learn everything then. And my friend had a music store, a good friend that I met as I grew up. He had a music store. So I went and bought all the shittiest strings he had and went and strung every guitar in his store and learned everything about musical instruments I could learn about. And I can't tune a drum. I can't tune a piano, but I can tune a whirling string. I can change the reeds. I can tune guitars. I can do all of that. But I needed to learn, so I didn't go out there looking a complete fool. So that's when I met Springo.
Okay.
And then
what was he doing? He was an audio first, right?
He was the lighting designer.
He was lighting.
He went to a school even. He went to an LA art school or something and learned about lights. He was going to go into TV at one point. And the guy I was calling for the job, Paul Mazo, gave me the job, and I had to just make like you do. Here's the number. You call this guy, and if you call this guy, he'll hire you. Right? How many times have you done that, Chris? You know, call this guy and follow up, right? You follow up. Okay, he called the guy. Now you got to call the guy. So I called this guy and I left. And I didn't know it was Grammy time. I had fucking no idea. And I left. I ran his machine out of tape. And he called me back finally one day. And you know, it's like, don't touch the phone. Don't touch the phone. I'm waiting for the call. You know, busy signal come in, you know, from I was with my folks and that. They it was John Cosette who and his dad were the producers of the Grammys.
Okay.
And I got the job. And then Paul Mazo again wrote down everything I needed to do. And I to this day I wish I could find him on a legal pad, and I still use the legal pad, is that everything to do when you get there. And he wrote down every character, everything. Yep. and so that's when I got into that. And I went out with them. They did 21 weeks a year. And I was with them for 2 years.
And that's Shana Na.
Yeah. Wow. And during that time, I went out and did sound and lights for this lighting company, Eclipse Sound. I was Ricky Nelson's guitar tech.
Really?
Yeah.
You went to a garden party, huh?
I went to a garden party and he was fucking a hoot. You know, you could ride the bus, but you had to sit in the front seat. You couldn't go past the curtain. And, but you know, you do in those days, you'd leave on the first of the month, even with the club bands. And then you'd leave on the first of the month, you'd come home the 30th of the month. You know, you just go and do shows almost every single day. Yeah, you drive to get to the next gig. You just drive and get to the next gig. Yeah. And that's when I moved to LA and I was carting gear around LA and John Cosette had a pickup truck and Springo and I lived together. So I started carting gear and I ran into Jan. You know, Jan from SIR, he runs Center Stage. Jan and his partner.
Yeah.
I met them at a gig. At the Stray Cats gig, I was dropping off some gear for somebody and they're going, you're that kid that's picking up gear and taking business away. Why don't you come work for us? So I went to SIR and applied for a job and they gave me a job. And I had the night shift. And, you know, the night shift at SIR is fucking hilarious. Tom Mayhew worked there. Mike Mayhew worked there. So think about it, you know. And at that time, Mike was working for John Luc Ponte and Weird Al. Weird Al. Yeah.
Wow.
And I used to go to their apartment, hang out, you know, in between shifts and stuff, and then work. And Tom's done some shit to me. You know, as a kid, as we were kids, we did whatever. Yeah. You hear, I want you to coil all these cables up and put them over there and label them. Okay. And he came back and goes, fuck, are you done? I go, yeah, I'm done. Whatever you need. So I learned LA that way. And that one night, Quarter Flash was playing. And I was running the night shift to lock up. They were in the big stage in the back. That was when Sunset and Gower, the big studio.
Yeah.
And I helped Quarter Flash load out. And that's where I met Mark. I forget Mark's last name. But Mark Thomas, I think it was. Thompson or something. He worked for Show Lights. And I loaded him out. Load him out. And went over to the Palladium and loaded him in. Or wherever, one of those theater things. And loaded them in, and they gave me the card and Show Lights. And that's when I went down there, and they were doing that, you know, and they, I don't know if they still do it at vendors, but you do the cattle call for the summer hall of, you know, and then they weed them out. You know, you got 100 guys here, you know, and they're building shows at Show Lights like mad, you know, just, you know, they stick you in a paint booth outside and you spray paint trusses and the paint goes all over and sprays all the cars. And that's when I worked for Aaron Pierce.
Wow. Yeah. That's where that whole conglomerate of Show Lights and Show Stage and Show whatever.
Power and all
show
that.
Power,
Show Group and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, so I knew a little bit about lighting from when being a lighting guy back in the day, you know, in that time. And this is 1983. So it's only, you know, 3 years in and just learning like you do. And that's where I met. I don't know if you know Gary Mardley. He works for Ed Kish now. He's one of his main guys.
I don't believe I know
you him. Know Scotty Dobson, all those guys came from all the Ed Wannabo. The list goes on of people that worked through there, and I was one of the last standing after the thing, and Eric Pierce came up and said, we want you to start full time, we want you to work more hours. And I said, well, you have to pay me I need you know, guaranteed that you're not going to fire me. I'm seeing you let people go every day. And because I was working nights at SIR. So I'd work days at Show Lights and drive to SIR, you know, when I was done, straight from Compton to Hollywood in my little Fiat.
So you started training yourself not to get any sleep at a very young age.
Yeah, sleep in the car, you know, I mean, and, you know, doing everything else to stay awake. So Eric gave me a full-time job. And the worst thing was he put me on salary, which is you put in, you know, more hours than you ever did. You're cleaning up, doing hours. So he didn't like that, you know. So, but that's when Van Halen went out. The big Van Halen tour went out. 1984, Van Halen went out. And I hopped on that. I didn't hop on that. I went out to help out. They were having trouble. I was one of the motor guys in the rigging department. And I went out to help Scott Barnett. And at the end, Patrick Whitley sent Scotty home and kept me. And
it was the LDN 1984.
It was Pete Angelus.
Pete Angelus. Oh, yeah, ended up being Dave's manager. Gotcha.
And that was
what? How many park ants was that? 800?
We were 1,000.
And how many lighting guys are on that crew?
Well, I think
there were a bus. It's a bus.
It was 13 of us on a bus. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4. There was 13 of us, 13 lighting guys, and a couple drifted off. Because then I think we only had 2 or 3 buses. Maybe we had 2, you know, lights, sound, and a bunch of stuff. You know, our rollover of that. I think we were 2 or 3 buses only. And we had 12 bunks, 2 in the back. I was in the back. So there's, and then 1 in the front. So there were 15 on the bus. And it was only a 40-footer. And no one cared. No one freaking cared.
It was a Model 10. Yeah.
Who cared? Maybe. Let's go.
Let's go.
We're on the biggest tour in the world.
And so you guys had to climb to Focus, right?
Were you
a climber for Focus?
Yep.
And how long would you be in the air spinning bulbs going from one side of the rig to the other with somebody on the ground pointing up, down, turn the bulb?
I got to say, Dave Jellison was on the ground and he was quick. And there were 2 people on the ground. 2 people. There was 2, I think 6 of us up, 7 or 8, maybe 8. Dimmer guys were down. And whoever in Focus had to fix cases. So, you know, and I became really good at fixing cases.
Right. And then you guys had to run spotlights, trust
run
spots during
spotlights,
the show, right?
Trust spots. Yep.
We had, that was a long freaking
day, man. It was, and we had to dress into these jumpsuits, and I still have it. I found my jumpsuit. I put it on, put the fucker on, fit in it. I was like, yeah, I still fit. That was one of my accomplishments, accomplished that over this time. Yeah. But it was great. You know, Patrick Whitley was there as the production manager. The scariest part of the day was in the morning when you'd wake up. Once you figured Patrick out, you wake up and you'd look out the bus window to see if there was a taxi cab. And if there was a taxi cab, you looked around for Patrick. And if he was in front of the door, you ran out the bus quick because he was holding a plane ticket for somebody.
Wow.
Yeah, there was no, phew, you're done, you know. No talk, no nothing. You're gone.
Well, you know what? I kind of think you picked up on that.
I did pick up on that. And then, it was a fun tour. We had a great time. Once we got it down, it was great. And back to the stagehand thing. I think we'd get like 4 stagehands for the 13 of us. I didn't see a stagehand till, you know.
Right.
And it was a big show back then. I think we were 7 trucks, and it was jam-packed. Eric Pierce made some gear that fit. It fit. Everything, 2-across, 4-across. 2-across or 4-across. Nothing different. Everything fit. 45 or 30s. You know, and the trucks are a little narrower, so you had to be ready.
And they didn't have as much E-track, and you didn't have as much straps or many bars, and you need to make it fit, or your shit's broken.
Yeah, these trailers would show up back then with packing blankets and the electrical wire, you know, the tubing in the top, and the dance floor too short.
Rubber tires.
Yep, I personally made a piece, and you could take with Eric's gear, you could take the graph paper, the squares with the square, right? Graph paper, is that graph paper?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And you could take that and go, that's one case, that's that, and you do it and draw it out, right? You could draw out your truck pack before you got your truck, and then the dance floor would show up and it'd be too short. So I had a little piece that at the shop was mine that fit on the dance floor to make it just enough to go, boom, there you go. And it worked. You know, so... And then the tour was great. You know, once you got it down and you realized the beating you were going to take, I mean, there was a day I fucked up my arm so bad. It just ripped into it. I caught it on it because we carried a mountain stage flooring and a mountain roof that flew to the ceiling. And so that we had 2 of those. So you would load in with that shit in the way, and the grid would go up, points would be, you know, you'd hang the points and it'd go up, and then this mountain stage, it wasn't a roller, and it was tall, 7-foot tall. You're like, what the fuck? So
was it cross? Was it cross braces and
layered staff? It was layered staff. Yeah, with the honeycomb decks on it that were shit that, you know, would roll something on. Or And the set was a scaff set too. So once the light, there was all the spigots sticking up. So you'd smack your toe and break your toe on it.
And a lot of steel too. So you guys are humping.
Yeah, the steel was up when we got there though.
I'm talking about the stage set. The stage set wasn't made out of aluminum.
It was steel. It was all layered scaff, and it was just built up. And then they put fake speakers in front of it, and the risers were on top, and all that stuff. So it was big. I mean, and it was backdrops. There was no video there. There was no video on there. There's nothing.
Multiple backdrops with travelers that changed throughout the show. Believe me.
Yeah.
You and I did the same shit.
You know. I mean, there was a lot of good people out there. You know, it was good. It was definitely good. You know, and that was when catering was shit anyhow.
Okay, so you're a lighting guy for most of the '80s.
Yep.
Did you ever become a crew? You ever become a crew chief or?
Yeah. I did. On my next tour was with Charlie. That's when Charlie and I met in New York, Billy Squire.
All right.
And I came in as the number 2. Jeff Durling was the lighting crew chief, and JT McDonald was the
I remember that name. Yeah.
LD, and Steve Cohen designed it. Okay. And it was audio analysts and show lights, and we went in. Charlie and I hit it off right away. You know,
it's kind of hard not to hit it off.
Yeah. You know, and what inspired me about Charlie is he didn't get high. You know, that's what drove me not to get high. You know, so he didn't get high, and I was impressed that he didn't get high. And I was like, there was a production manager and/slash tour manager, because as you know, there was no titles back then. You just kind of, the tour manager, the road manager was the production manager / take care of the band, take care of the crew, and then the stage manager kind of wielded the day. And Charlie was the stage manager, and we were in the pier. We were at the pier in New York, where it's all fancy dancy stuff now and all that shit.
Yeah, and that's where you and I met, actually.
Okay.
It was on Great White Tesla. On the pier in Manhattan. You did that tour, right?
Yeah.
You do remember. I mean, I had long hair, and I was probably wearing cowboy boots. So I was probably who's this fucking guy?
But I remember. Was that 85?
I couldn't tell you when Great White Tesla was, but it was somewhere in the 80s.
No. Great White Tesla, 88. That was 88. But I thought we met. Maybe, were you on the Joan Jett when they opened for Rat?
No. Okay. But I worked for Joan Jett from 86 to 89.
Okay. Yeah. Because they were, I thought it was, well, it might have been 85 then. Yeah. When we had the dwarf. And but Charlie and I met. And so that's where I became, we went through, Jeff left. And then they moved another guy up. And he fell through the floor, you know, couldn't handle Charlie, you know, in the sense of not a bad way. But just fucking do it. Just do the fucking job and shut up and don't show up drunk. And of course, everybody doubled up, you know. So we were all sharing rooms, and my roommate was a drunk. And he came into a loadout wearing, he was from Texas, Dallas. And he came in with you remember when the Texas boys, all the Shoko boys used to wear the shorts, the Texas flag shorts. and they were little swim trunks. So when all the guys used to wear the little whitey, you know, little short one, he came in drunk with a bus tray of, you know, from like a restaurant bus tray, catering bus tray, dropped it on the ground, told all the stagehands, start drinking up. And Charlie just kind of went, party's over, turned to me, grabbed my shirt, said, you're the crew chief. And Taz, do you remember Taz from back in the day, guitar tech? He, great guy. He, him and I hit it off really well. I go, fucking thank God. So that's when I became a crew chief. You know, it was like, fuck it. Here you go. You're in charge. And you want to be in charge? Be in charge.
Course. Yeah.
So fuck yeah. Give
you
it
did
to
that.
Me. Yeah.
And then, you met Charlie. Who was the first production manager to make you a stage manager?
Charlie.
And what was that on?
Rat. Okay. It was back then, you know. Again, his was / production manager, stage manager. He just gave me, he seen me do the duties, you know, because he was busy with other stuff where I would get with the steward. There's only two departments, crying out loud, and the set got what you got at the end, right? Here you go. You clowns, because you didn't have a rolling stage. You clowns get the hands when we're done with them. And we were cut, you know, so he caught on and he said, hey, you be my stage manager. You be my stage manager
as a lighting guy.
Yeah, okay. But it was just kind of undercover, and I rolled with it. I said, "Screw it, yeah, sure."
Yeah, I started with Rat right after that because Vid left, and I became Juan's bass tech less than a year, late '80s, you know, and I was their stage manager, bass tech, blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
but it was soon after that was the first time we worked together. It was Dr. Feelgood.
Okay.
Last show of the tour, Dr. Feelgood. Compton Terrace, Phoenix.
Oh.
You're their stage man, and Jake is out of his fucking mind.
That comedian was there. Fucking that comedian guy fell in the hole. What's his name? The loud one.
Sam Kinison.
He came out to do the band, and he shot through one of the lifts and fell through. Like,
Okay, so the story goes, I'm, you know, one day I'm at home, the next day is, hey, you need to come out and fill in. Terry Wieland was working for Faster Pussycat. Remember okay, Terry, yep. Guitar Tech? Yep, for some reason, he couldn't do the show. This was, right. I came in, I was just doing the very last show of the Dr. Feelgood tour. It was like 2 or 3 years long or whatever. And this is the last show and everybody's a fucking mess. And I come in and I'm looking at this guitar rig and I'm like, fuck, I'm looking at the cables. I'm looking at the rig. I don't know how to. So I took all the cables apart. I'm separating, I'm doing single cables. I'm slowly patching and I'm slowly trying to troubleshoot and make this guitar rig work. And I finally get it ready to work, you know, and it's a fuck, there's cables everywhere. It's a mess, but I got it working. I was really impressed with myself. And I go out on stage, you know, I'm like, oh fuck, I hope this works. And I go, bang, like, oh great, I got it working. And then who was the front of house guy for the British
Laurie
guy?
Quigley.
Laurie Quigley comes up on stage. He gets an inch away from my face. He's screaming at me, spits coming out of his mouth. He's going, you don't make noise until I tell you you can make noise. I'm like, oh, okay.
Wonderful guy. Wonderful human being.
But anyway, I remember it so. Faster Pussycat plays, it worked. I'm very proud of myself. The show's over, I'm putting a guitar away. I turn around, you're standing next to me. You've got all these individual cables balled up into this big ball. It goes, here's your shit. You're doing set change. You're like, get this fucking stuff out. I'm like, oh good. It's like, oh, that's Opie. We've met before, but
I mean, Jake, you know? that position was a different, I don't know how that position felt in the sense of how it was, because after all of that, being a lighting guy for all that time, and you know, and getting to that point is when I met Jake after Def Leppard. Charlie brought me out on Def Leppard. That's when I left Show Lights. I was like, I'm done here, and I asked for $100 raise, and they said no, and no joke, this is no joke, Charlie will tell the story almost the same. Is that the phone rang and I got paged. I was in the office and they handed me the phone. I said, can I take it? Yeah. And Charlie said, just, I said, where are you? I said, I'm in the office with blah, blah, blah. And I said, and how's it going? You hate it there? And I go, yeah. And he goes, and we were about to embark on the Monsters of Rock tour. This is already, I've done the 86 tour with Sammy and Van Halen and all the other tours, all the Rat tours and everything. And Charlie was on Def Leppard. He was rocking that out. And he said, I'm getting rid of some people and you want to come out as my ground rigger / carpenter / security guy. Cause back then no one cared fucking security. You were the security. You helped the band member out.
I was security. I'm still security sometimes.
Exactly. You know, and my guy was Stevie, you know, and the guitar player, what's his last name? Steve Clark.
And the guy who passed away from a little too much alcohol.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll give you this much more. And I'm like, geez, that's a fucking lot more of this. I'll give you $100 for here and I'll give you more of this. And you can sell merchandise during the show.
And make cash.
And make cash. And I had to catch the kabuki and he made cash. So that's when Charlie, and that's when I hooked up with Q Prime with Tony D, because he was the tour accountant out there. And,
was that the Hysteria? What was that tour? Yeah, was that the big one.
Yeah, that was at the end when it all blew up, you know, where woo, went through the roof at the end, you know.
I just podcasted with Scoville a couple of weeks ago, and he told the story very eloquently about how you guys started the tour, and, you know, and then, you know, the Pour Some Sugar on Me video, and Armageddon comes out, and then it just goes through the fucking roof.
Through the roof, and it was a blast. And that's when Riggers went back. I had a hotel room during the day. You know, you go back to the hotel and crash out for a little bit because you got hotel rooms, you know. So then you get the buyout instead. You all take the buyout, you know. And that's when I hooked up with Tony and Q Prime during that. And Tony took me out on Metallica. And I met Jake before through Show Lights when they did the Girls, Girls, Girls tour. And they had the big forklift spinning carpet thing, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, the drum,
And he came by the shop one day and I introduced myself. As we do, we know who to go. You go, okay, I know who he is, but I don't know him. So you introduce him. You just walked up to people then and shook their hand and went, hey. And then, so he replaced the guy and Tony took me and Ian Kindersley was out there and he took me and the rigging team out there from Def Leppard to start in Toledo, Ohio. to start the tour, the Metallica Justice for All tour. And that's when I met Jake. Right. And that's when Jake picked up on, and Charlie already picked up on this, is that what I really wanted to be. Because I'd go to Charlie's room and ask him, can I see what you do? You know, what do you do? What do you do when you call people? I know I need to do things. And Jake took me out, and he had this little thing, a Tandy computer with, you know, it never saved anything, but it had a little, you put a disc, a big old floppy in it, and he would have this sheet that he would print out that had all the venue, not information, you filled in the information when you talked to the guy or gal, whoever you talked to. And Jake, I used to take notes as a lighting guy of every venue, from Modendoor to Old Power. I had notebooks full of it, you know, with the yellow legal pad.
So you knew going in next time, yeah.
Yeah, yep. And so Jake said, what are you doing in your bunk, you know? And I said, well, I'm writing down my notes from the night before. And he goes, why don't you come to the office the next day and I'll show you something. And he gave me that sheet. It was like 3-4 pages or whatever it was. And I printed up a bunch. And he caught on that I wanted to do it. And he sent me out on a Metallica run, being they knew me, because he was doing Motley Crue to Europe. And we did some sludge fest across Europe in the dead of winter, you know, Jason Bonham, Dio, Metallica, and two other clowns in front of us, Avax, you know, and we played around Europe. And, you know, it was, I learned a lot, never said no. And that's when Jake started farming me out. And Charlie and that farmed me out to people and get me out there.
I think the first artist I remember you doing production for, was it Poison? I mean, when
I did, yeah, I got on Poison. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I remember that in the early days. I remember we were having a conversation, and because I was doing production at the time, and I was like, well, how's it working for Poison? Like, you know, it's a fucking pain in the ass. You know, I mean, I can't even buy a sheet of plywood without Bobby Dahl fucking approving it.
They wanted you as a crew member had to buy tape to tape down the stuff for them not to trip over. So no one, they'd come in and complain about no one taping down shit. And they're like, well, I am paying for that shit. We had it. Artie Freund, you know Artie Freund.
I don't know him, but I know who it is. You know,
yeah. Him and he was out there. We had the aluminum can collection. We'd crush cans so we could get a single room. So someone could have a single room. You know, I was doubling up. They wanted me to, you know, I was like, hey, you're out of fucking mind. You know, it's like, if you want bus food, you come to the dressing room and get it after, you know, after the show. You're like, oh, jeez, nothing in there. We'll give you a 12-pack of beer. So Artie said one day, said, you know, I was there long enough and I got out. But he said, you get the 12-pack today. We all get to watch you get drunk. You know, to somebody, you could pass the 12-pack. Today, you're the person. But we didn't. But in those days, as you know, you didn't get bus food. You'd stop at a 7-Eleven or wherever, eat a meal, because catering was a banquet table with maybe a chafing dish with scrambled cold eggs in it or whatever, or someone brought a bag of something else in and traded it for it. You know, it was like 10:30 would roll around and FedEx would show up in the day. And everybody would go to the bus.
Oh, you know,
it was a point where we'd only use stagehands when we had to go to the bus for a few minutes. You know,
cover for me. I'll be right back.
Yeah. I'll be right back. You know, and stagehands. How many stagehands did you get in those days? Not many.
And you know what? In a lot of times, it was easier without them. You know.
Yeah.
You know, it is.
And I know that things have gotten bigger. I mean, I always joke with Jake and go 4-2. 4-2, that's all you get. 4-2 riggers, that's all we got. 4-2, that's all it used to be. And all now it's 28 divided 14, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. One down for every two up.
Nobody wore a harness, all those guys, you know? Yeah. And I mean, Norman Gomes and I hooked up into all this time. All those guys, I mean, the library of people that we know is like, and great people, you know? So, and then, so, you know, like Jake and Charlie always supported pushing me on, you know, because I was that extra dog, you know, because you want to get people working so you can go do more and then people can cover you. So he got me out on that Metallica thing, and then he got me out on that Poison thing they both did, and then I left. It was just one of those things that
Poison.
Yeah, it was like I I can't be here. And during that time, when I decided it was not going to be, I started getting calls from Jack Boyle and Bobby Melotti and
and Doug Goldstein, right?
Yeah, asking me about this big tour they couldn't talk about to me, which you were a part of for about 5 minutes, and it was Guns N' Roses.
Oh, right.
And they're like,
I was a part of that. The story goes is I get, you know, Adam Day gets me to do guitars for Izzy.
Izzy,
and,
yep.
And I'm in there, just guitars for Izzy. I'm like tuning. It was simple. Yep. So Adam and I are hanging out and I was actually, Duff was asking me to make vodka and cranberry. And I'm like, making drinks for the crew. And I'm like, great. I'm tuning guitars and I'm making drinks. And then at the end of the day, Slash comes up to me and goes, hey, man, so what do you think? And I was just, I looked down with a big smile on my face and went, man, this was, you guys were so much better than I thought you'd be. And he just kind of gives me this look and turns around and walks away. And I'm back in my hotel and Doug Goldstein, right? Doug Goldstein was
there. Yeah.
I got a call from, Doug Goldstein. Goes, what did you say to Slash? And I went, I think I said you guys were a lot better than I thought you'd be or something like that. And he goes, well, he didn't like that very much. So I'm sorry, but you're not coming in tomorrow.
what I heard, it's a lot better than that. And it's kind of funny. I was told by Izzy to see if we could find someone else because you were too tall for him and you scared him. Now that's what I heard from Izzy.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah.
Oh, can I carry on with the story?
Yeah.
Because
you
know what? I actually confronted Slash within the last couple of years. I caught him in the right spot. Like, I don't know if you remember me, because we used to hang out at the same parties. We kind of knew each other And I told him, he goes, yeah, that doesn't sound to me like something I would do, But it was funny. That Guns tour was just massive. I did end up making it on part of it with the Cult opening up for you
guys. Right, yeah.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Does my memory serve me right? Did I see you drive a golf cart across the stage with Axl on the back of it singing?
Yes. Yep.
What the?
Well, during that whole tour, it was but this quick thing. So I left Poison, and I went and did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for Tony, which is hilarious. It was one of the best experiences I could ever have done with meeting people in other culture. And all they wanted me to do was bring rock and roll grit to load in and load out.
You know who else was on? Was that the Leroy Bennett one?
It could have been.
You know who else was on that tour?
Who's that?
He's here on the podcast with us.
Oh, you were? Were you a turtle?
Actually, Chris, it was the Power Rangers that I was.
Oh, pardon me. Power Rangers. Or Mutant okay. Teenage
Ninja Turtle.
Okay.
You know,
sorry.
It blurs.
Sorry. I'm getting it mixed up.
Leroy Bennett was on the Power Rangers tour, so there's a little bit of symmetry there.
So then I went and moved to LA, back to LA, living there throughout, in and out. They moved me into their hotel, or they had a condo in Redondo. And me and Wookie lived together. Remember Wookie?
Wookie, of course.
Yeah.
I've gone on to work with him a lot over the years.
Yeah, him and his sister looked the same. You ever meet a sister when they both had the long hair? They looked the same. But him and I lived together, and it was fucking great. We had such fun. We had such fun living together, and we had a condo in Redondo. And I was there probably 9 months, and that's where I got to meet Jerry Stickles and all those guys. And
Rick
and
Jerry O'Brien.
All those guys, we became friends, and Michael Ahern, all these people, because, it's a big act and people want to get their hands in there. And that's when, those guys had companies and they wanted to get in there. And respectfully to all of them, I said the same thing. I said, I'm going to do it. And I will call you if I need your help. And I just want to let you know, I want to learn. And Jerry was wonderful with information. I'd go to his office and hang out. And he had stacks of legal pads, the yellow ones. And his picture of him holding up the Marshalls with from
Hendrix.
Hendrix and all that. And he'd come down to the hangar one thing he told me something. And as you know, a lot of the older guys tell us stuff and you just put it in there. And he said, stay above all of it. And we were at the hangar in Burbank when people used to rehearse at the hangar. Just stay above it all. Just look down on it and you'll figure it out. And we finally got it out the door. But back to something you brought up earlier. My big thing was I'd fire a guy on the first day. I'd fire a guy. And it usually was a very light guy because they were usually knob ends anyhow. You know, it's like.
Well, I remember, I remember when I took Rob Zombie out on Ozfest and I only did the first couple shows and left, I was doing the Chili Peppers or something else.
Right.
And I remember it was the only time I was ever on Ozfest for like 3 days.
Yeah.
And it was the first day and I'm getting off the bus and I'm walking towards the building. This is in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, whatever that shed was down there. You
used to start West Palm Beach, right? West Palm Beach.
And there's a taxi. And you're with this guy and he's putting his luggage into the into the boot of the taxi. You're like, I don't care where you go, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, that's it.
You're just get off site. I don't know, whatever.
No, it's so, you know, but it'd be like, you're out of here. You know, and as you too, you know, there's at this point in my career, I know who's going to give me grief or not. And it's going to be nobody on the tour. I don't want, you know. And we know who to hire. We know who to look at. And we know, actually, to the point of what we talked about, again, the DNA of where they came from. Like Ski, you know, look at where he's – I mean, I know they came out of Full Sail, a lot of these guys did, that we're running into now. But you also look back at their background that drove them into it. You know, okay, you went to Claire. How long did you last? Did you show motivation to get out of there? It's like Guy, he got fired from on AC/DC from the systems engineer. And Guy was helping me do the set the whole tour, you know, that whole, you know, it is, you're busting your nut to get the thing up in time for the show for the first couple of weeks, you know, 3-4 shows, whatever you're into it. And he was helping and they go, we're firing him. I'm great. I'm hiring him. And the systems engineer quit. I loved it.
Yeah, well, Ski the same thing. Same story. One day he was like the last guy on the sound crew.
Yeah.
But you know what? Sound truck was always loaded and then he'd be on stage pulling feeder or putting motors into boxes and you know, getting his hands greasy with chain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this kid's a go-getter. And then one day he calls me in my room on a day off. It was in Hartford, Connecticut. I vividly remember this. And he goes, hey, can I buy you a beer? Can I meet you in the bar? And I went down, bought me a beer and we sat down. Like, what's up? He goes, how do I get your job? Okay. And there it started. Then our relationship started right then and there.
Yeah.
It was a sound. It was his last tour as a sound guy.
Yeah.
He was with me for years after that.
Yeah. And we know who those people are. You find them like Wagner and Kurt and stuff and all these people. And then you try to groom into another area. And if you don't see them going into that direction, you bring them back. And they do. Everybody that has who we work with, I believe, and you're the same way, has their niche of where, how far they want to go. I mean, there's guys that want to be a lighting crew chief forever. It's fucking be a lighting crew chief now. That's fantastic. You don't climb, you don't do nothing, you know, in that sense you do other, you know, other things, but you don't have to climb.
Of course
you don't have to do, you know, you're humping your butt. You got me on your butt. Yeah. And that's what lighting guys hate about me. Cause you know, as a backline guy, you know, to take care of the backline guys as being one, and you know how to do things with them. And then with the lighting guys, don't give me that shit. You get this up fast enough. You got your motors, you got your shit, you got your stuff, your points, roll. Yeah. Let's go. Get it out of my way.
You know, a lot of talented, well, maybe not talented, but it got a lot of, you know, production managers and stage managers who have been in this industry a long time. A lot of us started in lighting. Yeah. You know, it's that you're in first, you're out last, you see the big picture, you get a grasp on what a day is and how it works out. So, you know, you started in lighting, you say Springo did, I started in lighting, a lot of us did, you know, and I think there's a lot to be said for that, you know, and even going back, like you and I were saying, we loaded the truck, we drove the truck, we didn't have stagehands, we just, you know, kind of figured it out attitude.
Yeah.
How many guys are fast tracked these days? You know, it's crazy.
It is. And that's where you go back to the DNA of that. Even asking people, you know, family stuff, not being nosy, but it's also, I like to know about my guys and gals that you work with, you know, you know how a person, if they come with from a large family, you know, they've been fighting their whole life to work, you know, and get out and do stuff. And you know, they have competition in their mind. And that's what, you know, Toby Fleming was one of the first lighting crew chiefs I worked with and stage managers, real stage managers in the day, is that, you know, he would get us to compete on the lighting crew. Like, it was split in quarters. And, you know, this group and this group. So you would race to get your crap up before everybody else's crap. And you weren't flashing your systems either. You know, you're just, let's get the shit up, you know, and get it out of the way.
Well, then you have to climb if you don't
But
flash,
you did. So you but you climb. Did, though. You
had
did.
To climb you anyway. Climbed. You had you to climb anyway.
Everything was plugged in and everything. And you know, at a point we started flashing, you know, but it was like, get the shit up. You would have those little things you'd put on the bars of sixes that would tell you if everything's connected in the bar.
Oh, the ACLs. Yeah.
You could do, you know, where you would hump that stuff in, and but we'd get it up and running and we would compete. And that's what, you know, even when I met Jake and Charlie, competing was there, always competing. Jake was a heavy competer, you know.
We all had that.
Yeah.
You know, Jake started that with, okay, give me some extra trucks and then just fucking load them.
Right.
You know, just get it in. I stopped it a while ago. I mean, we all stopped.
Because it goes fast enough anyhow.
We did. We competed. We wanted to break the record. The stage hands wanted to break the record. Everybody was all into speed and getting the fuck out. But now I don't know. I stopped doing that.
No. And that was in the day where people didn't wear harnesses and crap and blah, 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 you know. But
or that's helmets what brought- or gloves or, you know.
But that also gave you time to get into learning too, and learning more about how things work. But as time went on, things become more modern and technology. And you know what? Our outs go fast enough. I mean,
they do.
You know, our stones out, you know, it's 25 trucks and we're done in 2.5 hours. And that's not even that. You don't hear my voice. I'm helping out because I want to help out. I'm not going to go sit in the office. What am I going to do? Talk to the girls, which I love working with, but I've been in there all day with them and I want to get a little workout on.
I know Kurt Wagner, he's done it to me and I know he's done it to you where, you know, he comes up and says, hey, you know, can you go back to the office?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're kind of, you know, cause sometimes you can't help it. The stage manager has a plan and he's got his thing going and you come out and contradict him, even slightly contradict him.
Yeah.
And it's, you know,
I make a deal with the stage managers. Now I'm on the floor for the first three shows, because after the first three shows, I need to, you know, what's going to make it work or changes need to be developed. I don't want someone coming in and telling me we need to change this, because you and I come up with the idea how it's going to work. Well, you need to implement it a little more and give me three times. And after that, like I walk the in with Kurt or a stage manager. Let me know what you're doing. Let me see what's going on. Give me my cases and I'll bugger off. I'll come on the floor now and hang with the guys for a little bit, because you want to do that. You need to get out there and get a good laugh in. And then the out, on most of them, I'll do the back line.
I used to do the back line for years. I loved doing the back line.
I love it.
Because they can't get there quick enough. You can get to the truck first. You know, the drum cases are coming. Yeah. You can at least get the first, you know, half dozen, eight rows before the back line guys even make it to the truck.
Right. So I help them.
Love loading back line.
On guns, we're right in there, both Kurt and I. And I send it to Kurt and you get some going and then they're gone. We've gotten them off deck in 20 minutes just to be that guy at the top of the ramp sending it. So when it hits the, you know, up there where it's not just sitting there, you know how stuff, oh, does this case go? That all goes. You want to keep it? You know, it all fucking goes down to the truck. Go. So, you know, with that and, you know, so that there, and you know, you just do it. You just do it and you push it out the door.
Totally.
You know? You know, and
loadouts are so fun.
I know. Here's a funny story. After my first Ozfest tour, or maybe the second one, might have been 98 or whatever, or 97, I can't remember. It might have been 97. Me, Greg Price, and a couple other guys left Ozfest and started a Boston tour. They shit their pants when we showed up, you know, because we were already on 11 and they were on, you know, 4. And we're just, you know, one act. Where's my stuff? And Tom Schultz stuff is all those RCA plugs into those monkey heads or whatever they are. You know, those big noses, right? Big noses.
Funny. Yeah, you know, exactly.
So that was good, you know, and did those, you know, as you know, I did a lot of those. Ozfest, you know, did 11 of them. And those were good and great grooming ground for guys. Great grooming ground. Because it was Shoko then. Shoko just would send out, they'd give me a crew chief, a monitor engineer, and a systems engineer, and everybody else is green as a ghost, you know, green
kids,
as the grass.
The kids, yeah.
And it was training ground.
And you figure out who's going to swim and who's going to sail. Yeah,
exactly. Same with the lighting department. You know, we had guys wander off. I'm leaving. That's where Attaboy came from. He was a stagehand in Nashville, and Gordo grabbed him and brought him with because two guys just wandered off. They were just like,
"How funny!"
You know, they just wandered off into the night. People would just leave. You know, it was just like fucking funny. I mean, at the end of the day, and I've had band members come up for me from opening acts on there. Come up to me. There's a quick story. We were at Third Encore in the big room at Third Encore.
Yep.
This guy came in there, and Brian and Angus were in the room with me, and this guy comes up and goes, "You were Opie, right?" And I go, Yeah. He goes, "You remember me from Ozfest?" And I go, No. He goes, "You yelled at me, and you really gave it to me one day when you told me," because there was no sound check. You could line check back to, Quigley, you can line check, but you can't sound check. So you're not here to play. You're here to tink, 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 and be done. So I chewed him out pretty good because it was like a second, third warning or whatever. And it was like, "You're fucking stupid." And he came and he said, "I really appreciate it. When I went on my own headlining tour, I understood now what you're doing and I really appreciate it." And Angus and Brian are just looking at me going, "What the fuck's going on here with this?" Because that office is little. The kid just came in there. He didn't even notice them. You know, they were so little.
Oh, funny. You know? Hey, so what's it like to have the Rolling Stones, AC/DC, and Black Sabbath going all at the same time?
Throw Guns N' Roses in there because it all went at once in 2016.
And Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
How do you keep your wits about you? How do you do that?
I'm going to add a little more on top of this. Stones are doing a South America tour and going to Cuba. Okay, in all this. Wow. So, how do I keep my wits? I learned how to, what's the word again? Empower your team. Empower your people that you trust, men and women. Trust them, don't hammer on them, and give them the wheel and go. Otherwise, I'm not gonna sleep. And the number one thing is, for me, I want is a text or a phone call after load-in's finished and load-out's finished. And if any problems in between, you call me. You say to the whoever's asking, the artist, Sharon, all anybody, I'll get right back to you. And you call me. I'll answer the phone. And my phones were on. I had two phones going. One was a Stones phone and one was everybody else. And, you trust everybody. You do all the advance. You do all the talk. You do everything with everybody.
But getting the artist to buy into it, the artists that hire me, they're like, we hired you. We want you. We're not hiring you to pass it on to somebody else. They're hiring me for me. So you got to get, obviously you've got Sharon who buys into it.
She was the first to buy into it years ago when I when I was doing AC/DC, because I did AC/DC, I did Ozzy, I did the Stones, and then I did AC/DC, then I did Ozzy. And not knowing Jake wouldn't be coming back to the Stones later on down the road. So I went and talked to Sharon, and I said, AC/DC is going to go. And this is already about 5 years into it with her and I. And so she said, no problem. And, Charlie covered for me. Ian Kinnersley covered for me. George has covered for me. I mean, the list goes on of people who have covered for me out there. She wanted someone in the seat, especially on an Ozfest. And then AC/DC bought into it because they seen I could do it. And the Stones deal is, you come and go, yeah, but not a lot. And you have to, you know, again, you know, all of them are the same in a very respectful manner, you know, but I said it at the beginning. That's how everybody bought into it. I'll tell you that right now. Like even the beginning of Ozzy with Sharon, I said, when AC/DC goes, I'm going to go. And that they toured 5 years apart. You know, you do a tour, you know, I did started Ozzy in 97. Their next tour was 2001, you know, so, and then Jake was doing the Stones. And in 2005, he stayed on U2. So I went and talked to Sharon and asked her to bless me to go. And I did. And Charlie covered me out there. And, you know, and to this day, I still, you know, as you know, and I know, the blessing of any tour, any job is getting the call back, you know, getting that call, you know. And it's hilarious. Brian Johnson calls the house. And when caller ID existed, it came up, Brian Johnson on the phone. Hey, Brian, he doesn't hide his name, you know. And, you know, like with Mick calls, you get a, I get a call before Mick calls and then Mick calls, you know. Hey, you going to be around? Yep. Mick's going to call you. Okay.
Nice.
You know, same with, you know, Brian, hey, you know, you keep in, you know, it's all in communication, as you know. And that's the biggest thing, the problem we have with the, in this day, people won't pick the freaking phone up.
You know, I'm guilty of that over the last year. I keep my phone on my desk with the ringer off. I rarely use it.
No. Right now, I'm telling you, on tour, working.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I had a psych coordinator come to me. He was young. And he said to me, he said, they're not returning my emails. And I said, did you do what I asked you to do at the beginning? It's Europe, right? So, you know, in Europe, the first time you go to Europe, you need to make phone calls to people and introduce yourself or an email saying, hey, I'd like to talk to you, get to know people and stuff like that. And he did. I said, did you call anybody? He goes, no. And I go, well, then they're not going to call you. They're not just going to call you. You better respect them before you need to earn your respect.
Especially, you know, in countries like Italy and where there's a little machismo going on there.
You want to be friendly with people, as friendly as you can be, and because you want to get out too.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So being blessed, meeting Jake and Charlie and all these other great production managers. I mean, Ken Graham did. You know Kenny Graham, right? He did the Eagles in the day, like the Long Run and Hotel California. And he did the Don Henley tour I did in 85. And that was like, that was probably the best tour I ever did artistically and hanging with Don. And it was
interesting. I would not have guessed that.
And in the day, you know, and you know this, there weren't buses. You landed or you get a rent a car and a team of people would get one car, another car, another car. We raced around the world, or America in the cars. It was great working with them. And it was fun. We'd get a bus once in a while, but Ken Graham was the production manager. You learn from all these people. That's the other thing when people don't learn from these mentors, these people that have been around, even like with what I said about Jerry Sickles. I didn't know Michael Ahearn that well, but we talked a little bit.
Very nice man.
Yeah, very nice man. And people you just introduce yourself to, you know, and you pay homage to these people that are up there.
He's got a great story coming from Bill Graham and Fillmore East and all that. I mean, great story. Yeah.
He became the Stones guy, you know, for all that time. And then, you know, time went on and Jake got it. And then it came my way. I'm never letting it go. That's the best fucking thing on the planet. You know, you got one of those guys.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember the time you called me to cover you on the Stones. One of the best calls I've ever got. I had to say no, unfortunately, but that would have been great.
But you're blessed with somebody too, you know. I'm
more than blessed. You know, it's high profile. It's quality work.
Yeah,
it's good money, and you know they trust me. And
they listen to you.
They'll listen to you.
And with your creativity, you know, I'm going to say this in a respectful way. I think I'm more nuts and bolts and artistic than you are. You're more artistic. You can see color. You can see visions. I can see more brick and mortar, you know, that type of bringing. I can't paint. I can't paint a house. I can't, you know, I drink cheap wine. I, you know, it's like, but but well, that's the thing about personalities. Our business, you know,
and production managers are all different. We all do things differently. Jake does it differently than you, and I do it differently than you. Yeah. And you know, Springer
see,
does
Charlie
it differently.
Has that, Charlie has that vision, like you. Yeah. He can see things. He can see color and that, and like, and that's why I really liked when you got Roger, because Roger is that guy. And I'm like, that's fucking awesome for you. I remember calling you when you got that gig. It was like, fuck yeah. That's how I felt about it. That's what I said in my office that day. Fuck yeah, Chris Kansas doing fucking Roger Waters. Awesome. Fucking awesome. You know?
Well, thank you. Well, the point I was trying to make is we're all different. We all have these different paces. As you know, I've had guys on my crew that were fresh off of your crew.
They're on
11 and they're hitting the ground running. And they get to me and they're like, oh, you know, they're tapping their foot and they're like anxious to do shit and like crazy. Yeah. And I'm like, it took them a while to get used to how I work. But they always do. And, you know, it's just we're all different.
You chameleon yourself to the beast you're within, right? You and I do. You go work for one band. It's different how you are on another tour in some way.
That's exactly right.
You have to figure out, you know, and I know this sounds, it doesn't sound silly to anybody that's probably listening. When I get an interview with an artist, I watch their videos. I learn about these artists.
Absolutely.
I talk to people. I call people up. I read interviews because in an interview, they'll be real.
Same thing.
They'll be real, you know, and you go, okay, you know, this is who it is, you know, and I've had some interviews where I've gone home from big profile artists and I've called them back and I said,
let's recall the one interview that you told me about when you interviewed for Madonna.
Okay.
Okay. And so you tell me where I'm going.
I'm going to start this off before you go. It was the best interview of my life. Okay, so
correct.
She's on game.
They say the people I know that work for Madonna say she works really, really hard because she's not the best singer and she's not the best dancer and she knows she needs to work extra hard. So she puts the time in. So that's very respectful.
Here's what they did at the beginning. They took my resume and they told me to edit it. So I put Janet, Alicia Keys, all these women, TLC. And she goes, these are kids. Have you worked for anybody else? And I go, well, if you're looking into, you know, and the words may not be, but how I put it was if you're looking for adults, you know, Joyce Smith for the Rolling Stones manager, Sharon Osbourne, Janet Jackson. And four times, every 15 minutes, she said, I'm not a dance guy. And I go, I know how to handle feet. You know, Mick Jagger is probably the biggest foot guy in the world, next to Angus and Ozzy. Gotta have my gray fucking carpet so I don't slip, you know? You know, the show coat carpet for him. AC/DC has a certain floor for Angus to do his skip. Mm. The foot and range, like, what are you gonna do? And I told her all my things that I would do to help her and this and that. And I land, the good funny part, another funny thing was I got back to my hotel and I left the tour and asked her permission to go take the interview. And she called back and she goes, was it all warm and fuzzy? And I said, nope. She goes, and she was the first I told before Simone, because she got a hold of me right away, Sharon did, and said, she said, you're going to do it. And I said, no. And I called Arthur and them and said, no, thank you. I'm not the guy. Honestly, I'm not the guy. I'm not that guy. I'll take abuse. You know it. I know it.
Well, you were a chameleon enough. You were a chameleon enough to put a suit on and work for Prince.
Yes. Yep. And he called my house and asked me to be his promoter and come to work for him. And I said, you know, can I call you right back? I just want to have a little think about this. And I called him back and I said, I'm not your guy. I'm not that's not my role.
Yeah.
But I will introduce you to a guy in Australia. I've introduced him to some people at that time. He was this, I got to say, none of them have been horrible people. None of them, you know, none of the people we worked for at the end of the day are horrible people because they're artists too. As you know, they're artistic and they have this vision that you're going to produce their dream. You're going to take their dream and put it out there and make it look good. And as we learn, don't ever let the artist in when the house lights are off. you know, first day. You guys can't come into the building until the house lights on.
Exactly. You got to set a look.
Set a scene.
Impression means the world.
Yep. And we had it. We had this wall. We had the ball breaker tour. We had this huge wrecking ball that swung. And it's supposed to drop to the ground and blow up the floor, go back up. And Angus comes out of the stage in a cage. Well, you know, we just get it. We're trying it. And we didn't know they were in the seats. And all of a sudden, I see Angus and Mal behind me going, get rid of it. Throw it away. Fuck that shit. I'm like, okay. But now we've seen enough. Looks like too much hassle. So we just kept the cage that came out. The ball hit the thing and he popped out and it looked great, you know. But those guys are sensible people anyhow.
Yeah, you know,
those, I mean, and that's that they all are sensible in that way too. You know, you just, number one, when you're in your interview, that's the most, you're always honest to your artist, but that's the most honest you're going to have to be right there. You have to just put it out there. I feel that I
don't blow smoke and
this is me. And I surround myself with a great team of people and I'm not going to let you down. And then you got to make jokes. You should ask about family. You should ask about stuff. You should ask them questions too. Good stuff. Not like, you know, what'd you have for dinner? Why not? You know, what you guys been up to? Can I? With AC/DC, I would smoke with them because they smoke so much. The only way to get a good breath fresh of air is through a cigarette.
Wow.
Yeah.
That might be a bridge too far for me, but yeah. I totally know what you mean.
And you drink coffee. I didn't drink coffee until I met them. You know, it's like, oh.
Wow. You know, that surprised me.
I don't drink coffee anymore either. Mm. It's been 5 years. So, but. But no, we, as you know, we're honored to be with who we grew up with and work with. You know, and there's nobody that, you know, and I would say, you know, what people have to always remember in our industry, it's not, lots of times it's not the job you get let go about. It's your personality that takes you out of the job.
That is 100% correct.
You know,
lot of people who can do the job, there's not a lot of people who can hang.
Right.
You know, you want the people who can hang.
Yep. And and I give kudos to all the girls that have gone through my office with me working, you know, they can hang all of them. I haven't had, you know, I mean, Lori Tierney was my first and the saddest part is she was my vetter. She'd vet them women for me. You can use this one. This is one to take. Yep. Try this one out. Try that one out. I accidentally took the wrong one once that showed up. I paid for that, but no, you know, and you want one, and as Lori would pick, is one set she knew I could just go to develop them to not, you know, they can run the show. Okay. If I'm not there, you know, my most complimented moment was from Super Chris when Axel came and joined AC/DC and I was doing the Stones in South America and they were in rehearsals. AC/DC was. And Axel asked Angus where Opie was. And Angus said, he's here. Don't worry about it. He goes, where is he? He goes, he's here. Don't worry about it. Because everything I built was continuous. You know, Super Chris was running it. Sarah was there. The team was there holding it. You know, it's the same pattern like you teach your team. I'm going to go away. You run the ship. Don't stay in your lane. Don't go outside the box. Just drive the car. Don't put it in the lake. Okay. I gave you an omelet. Don't scramble it. You know,
funny.
But you do that, you know, your team. And that's one reason I pulled off all those shows where the great stage managers and the great people, my assistants, they're my partners. They're my right hands, those people, you know.
You've got Debbie Taylor with you now, and I've worked with her recently, and she's incredible, you know, really good lady.
She's sharp, always wanting to learn, more, always. You know, she just finished up that Dan Parisi thing. She was doing that, or not, sorry, God rest his soul, but the DPS thing in L.A., and she's doing the COVID part of it, and she's learning all about it, which, you know, as you know, that won't work when we're out there. She says, mm-hmm. even she's like, that ain't going to work when we're touring. It's too expensive.
Too slow.
Yeah. Get the shot, everybody. Just everybody get the shot.
I agree. Are you double vaxxed yet?
Yep, done. We moved our state rolled. I think our state's rolling to 12 and above now.
Nice.
And they're giving, you go to the Walmart down the street and at the airport, they're handing them out. You go to the airport, come to Terminal 4, you get your shot, go to the Walmart, walk through the Walmart, and through the greeter says, hey, you want a shot? You know, so it's I think we're at 5 million something here.
Nice. Yeah, well, the country's almost, what are we, about a third of the way through? 32% of people.
I think it's third. Yeah. I think it's third. Which, you know,
I don't know, man. I people are. What is going to be your take on this vaccination in regard to people you hire? What are you going to tell your people?
I've already asked the guys, my normal guys, to get the shot. I didn't ask them to get the shot. I said, you know, I'd like you to get the shot. And they all are. They all are. And I got with the unemployment, I was calling them. And what got gets everybody going is somebody calls somebody and then you call it, pay it forward and wind somebody else up and wind somebody else up. Oh, I don't want to get it. And I've asked the vendors, please send me guys that have been vaccinated.
Exactly. That's good. That's what their take is. Like what John Huddleston's saying. He's saying that, you know what? You know, we're not going to make anybody get vaccinated, but if the tour makes it a priority, then we can only send people that are vaccinated. And you know what? I'm not going to make anybody get vaccinated, but I'm going to hire the person that is vaccinated. Because for every person that's not vaccinated, there's going to be someone standing behind them who wants the job who is vaccinated.
Right.
And that's the bottom line.
And like I said about personalities, you know, as personalities I've said, and I know your squad of guys, you're going to ride that bus without that guy with the shot? Without the shot, you know, I'm just going to say there's 12 bunks. Okay. I'm just rattling off numbers. There's 12 bunks. One's the bus driver's bunk and there's 11 on the bus plus bus driver, you know, that bus driver better get the frickin' shot and not be hanging out at the bars. What I am going to ask the team is this, and I know I can't stop anyone from doing anything, but I'm going to ask them, think about what you do and think about the consequences of your actions on the tour for going out. Could stop the tour. So please pay attention to where and what you do. You know, I got guys that want to be DJs on nights off. And they go down these raves and do this stuff where they travel on local transportation because they want to go buy weed, you know, and whatever they do, you know, and you go, just remember what you do can stop this tour in its tracks.
Yeah.
You know, all the artists I've worked for are all vaccinated.
Yeah.
Done. They're all done.
We have to create our own bubble. Because we can't control stagehands, we can't control security or caterers or, you know, ushers. We can't control that. We can only control ourselves.
Yeah.
If we can control ourselves, that way we're going to be void of liability.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be, you know, like you said, the train's not going to stop because of one person.
Right.
You know, we've got to create our own bubble. We just have to.
We have to and tighten it up. And I, you know, and I'll say this, thank God I got the Mayhew brothers because they're going to be all about it. You know, because Mike has had the cancer and, you know, Tom's a strong voice for me when it comes down to go tell them fuckers, Tom.
He's a loud voice anyway.
Yeah. He's a good comedian, but you know.
What do you think's going to happen the rest of 2021? I mean, Dave Matthews is booking a tour. They're going out in July and planning on going out the rest of the year. I know like REO Speedwagon is going to go out. I mean, a lot of artists are gearing up and saying, you know what? We have to make a go of this. We have to take our industry back. No one's going to hand it to us. We need to take it back.
And that's the sad part, what you say. No one's going to help us out. Our industry helps out every damn benefit that goes on. And every artist has played all these free shows for all these freaking Save My City crap. No one has come to our freaking rescue, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, there's been people coming to bits of rescue, but, you know, we were the first to shut down and the last to come back. It was like, we looked at it and went, close the doors, everybody. You know, we were in Mexico, pack it up. I think we were one of the last ones out there. We came on March 15th. It was like, we're not coming back. And people that don't get vaccinated are only slowing down our jobs because we need to have numbers too. Because you got to remember, your bosses and my bosses, what have they been doing? Watching their favorite news channel.
Yep.
Okay. They've been paying attention to this more than we have. We're all watching the same thing, but you know, but where did I go off track on that? Oh, we're hoping I have two things go out this year. That's what we're hoping on. And I'm hoping one goes out of the two.
Yeah, I heard a rumor about one of your high profile artists maybe making a go this year. You know, so
but they're going late September.
Yeah,
they're talking September. End of September.
Know, we should be. You know, people are still getting vaccinated. Yeah. I mean, you got to think that more than half the country is going to get vaccinated. So we're at 32%. We're going to get over 50. You know, so if we can get up close to 60. And then, you know what? And then the people who have already gotten COVID, you know, we can consider them as good as getting the shot.
Yeah.
You know what? You got to think we're going to be close to a certain herd immunity by September.
Right. Yeah. The other one's a little too early for me, I think. July, I think that's too early.
Well, and it's like campaign is to get everybody 70% of the population vaccinated by July 4th.
Yeah. Right. But you got to want to get it.
And the good thing is they're starting with the doctor's offices now, you know, like your doctor is doing it. So these people that are leery of it, they're not going to put Bill Gates into you and a microchip and all that. Turn off your phone, your TV in your car and your lights in your house and don't have a computer on, nothing. If you're worried about a chip coming into your body or your DNA changing, give me a break. When we were kids, remember getting in grade school, I think it was second grade or whatever, or first grade, they walked up with that gun with a bunch of needles in it.
Oh, right. And you had this chunk taken out of your shoulder. Yeah. I've got one of those scars.
Yeah, you know, and everybody, you know, that kid in front of you throws up or whatever, you know, who cares? You got your shot. If you're a kid in England, you can't go to school without measles shots and all that other stuff. If you're not vaccinated for other stuff, it's like...
Right.
Come on. It's no one's putting anything into your body that doesn't want to make it better. It's not political. It's not
you know
nothing.
What? We have a precedence in our industry, and I've brought this up before, and some people shake their head and some people agree with me. If you want to go to South America, for years, the doctor came to rehearsals and you all lined up to get your shot and you just did it. There was no kind of, well, I don't want to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Everybody got it.
Yeah,
and everybody got it. There was no arguing, you know.
No,
but our industry, we can only speak for our industry. But you know, we'll see. Hopefully, everybody will get it.
Yeah.
But what do you think? I know your dog has to go for a walk soon, but let me ask another question.
What time is it? She'll be tired. What is
your take on what's going on in Europe and the cabotage and the difficulties we might be facing, you know, next year and onward when it comes to Brexit? And
well, I've been talking to Mark Gutierrez and he's been filling me in and I feel safe with him.
Me too.
With Jurg, I feel fine. You know, like Roger Daltrey says, oh, we're going to go back to what we used to be. You know, where you had to do carnets and you had to do stuff and you had to make sure that people had visas and you know what? It's not, you know, it will get there. It will get there. First, they got to get over COVID completely because they're just what they blow out. Roskilde blew out today.
Yeah.
Yeah. That went away. And there's others that are going to go away. Yeah.
The UK is going to be fine. But,
yeah.
It's an island,
all those other places, you know, I feel for all those guys over there, you know.
Nobody's been vaccinated in Germany yet. Isn't that so shocking to you?
Yeah.
It's just shocking to me.
One of the guys said, I'll probably be around October. I'm like, October? Come here. Come to my house for 2 weeks. Yeah. I'll take you to Walmart, you know? It's
like, bring your family.
Bring your family. I have one organization bring their whole family over. They're bringing a ton of them over. You know, they all have passports and visas and stuff, and they're just going to come here. It's, you know, I think we'll be all right. We're going to have to be, right? We're going to figure it out.
We're going to have to be. We're just going to have to figure it out.
There'll be the goats in front. They'll get bit and they'll call us all or write some blog and bitch about it. And we'll go, I ain't doing that. And we'll figure it out. You know,
what's your take on sustainability moving forward? Are you keeping an eye on that? And as far as trying to be responsible in our carbon footprint and trying to do the right, whether it's in set design, whether it's trying to get less trucks, whether you're trying to you know.
Oh, give me Guns N' Roses is great. They want to cut. They want to get rid of. They want to cut back. Stones have gone from whatever we were in Bigger Bang, 42 trucks, to we're 23 and two generators. And, you know, Ozzy's easy. AC/DC, I have no idea, you know, yeah. But they'll be if they be, you know. You know, yeah, I had an email today from Roland, German guy, friend of ours. I don't know if you know him, but he's a good guy. He emailed me to want to talk about it. You know, I went carbon footprint on generators and trucks once, and I read this big whole thing that I killed more food than it was worth, you know, corn crops, you know, where you use the corn fuel or whatever, that gel, the natural fuel that gels up in your truck. Yeah.
You know, we're going to get judged, though. We're going to get judged.
Yes, I agree. You know what? There's so many good ways. And I was on the phone. I don't know when was the last time I talked to the gal at AAG that handles that. And I said, listen, the key to doing it on tour is for a stadium tour, you're going to need someone to travel with each site coordinator and have it set up before we come in. If you want to do water and get rid of the bottles and give us all things, no problem. I have no problem with any of that. Just it's got to be organized and in an honest way that, and then somebody's going around and collecting the crap on the end of the night. And then, you know, before you get there, it's all set up. And then when you leave, it goes with the steel team, you know, make a package in one of the trucks, right. And that all the water coolers are up. And if, you know, the band can have what they have in the back, that's fine. You know, Mick, we do a thing where he doesn't use water, you know, he uses water cups on stage, you know, certain cups, the containers and all that can be done. Bottom line is we want to spend the money. We can do whatever you want because you got to spend money to do that. And it's not a lot of money. If you think about it, like you're saying, we're going to be judged. Absolutely. We're going to be judged. Shit's going to hit the fan one day and everybody's going to go, oh, there's global warming. Why don't we fucking do this or that now? You know, it's like, come on. It's been coming around for the last, our entire
20 years. Yeah. Easily.
It's been coming heavy and people need to pay attention to it. Yes, they do. And it can be done. But like I said, you need somebody ahead to do it in the sense if you're doing stadiums and arenas, I would, you know, because I don't carry catering. I would have my person advance it and do all that. You know, water coolers, but you have to go in and tend with them because one guy in one city is not going to do what anyone else is. And I also told them to carry their machines, carry them all, just carry them.
I do the pumps. You can buy the pumps that you put on the top of the jug and just pump the water. You can do that. It's a pain in the ass, but you know, you can get it on Amazon for $15. So,
right. You know, yes, we need to do it because when we leave a gig, it's a garbage dump. You know, much garbage is out there. More than, you got to hire 30, 40 people to sweep the floor just to get trucks in. And they're not even done by the time you're done loading out.
Yeah.
They're still cleaning up. It needs to be handled. It does. But cutting down on vehicles, cutting down on things if you can. And again, trucking and busing. And if you can get, and then like upstaging they have, like Shannon explained to me, they got the generators on the trucks now, the years ago, you know, that run where you're not running the engines. When they sit,
right,
you know, so the guys can have comfort in their trucks,
and some of them have shore power abilities as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's getting rid of all those things that you can, but with again back to stadiums, you could cut out a ton of cases of water bottles laying around at the end of the night. You just need somebody to follow it up. You can't dump it on the girl in the office. Like if you go, oh, just you in there, your guys in the office can. We got more going on than you can imagine. You know, we may not carry catering, but you got to go in there and hustle their asses. You know, those are things. Yes, we need to do something. I've got to say, being home, I've been Mr. Recyclable, Mr. Clean It Up, Mr. Put It Away.
Absolutely. You know,
Simone drills it into my head and it's all good. I mean, I don't have my air conditioning on out. It's almost 100. I just opened the windows and got the fans on the ceiling. It's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. And we're getting way too hot too soon here. And we're down 2.5 inches of water from our normal at this time.
Oh no.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be ugly here. You know, we're not like you. We're not underwater. We're way above it.
Well, LB, I thank you so much for spending this time with us. This has been an absolute.
We'll have to do a part two. We could go on for another hour and a half.
We can. But, you know, people stop listening after a while.
I know. 20
long.
Minutes.
Can't be too
not
long.
This one.
But you know what? I've been able to do some cool stuff here. And I think I told you I got to do, one thing that we should all learn from this out here is save for your future. Look into what you have to do when we come back. Think about where you spend your money. Do you need to go to the hotel bar? Stay at the gig and eat dinner instead of run off. Just start saving your money, you know, your per diem, the whole bit, because there is going to be a day that you're going to want to go home and be done with this. And the cool thing on this time, we have this group called the Alliance for Lifetime Income, and I was involved with them on the Stones. They're a sponsor. And immediately when I got home in last year, I got a hold of them and said, they've told me this too. There's an epidemic of people that don't save for the future. And I said, right now you need to use me to the fullest. And I did a bunch of commercials.
Oh, wow.
And I did radio spots. And
really?
Yep.
And who is this for?
Alliance for Lifetime Income, ALI.
Alliance for Lifetime. Okay.
Yep. And I.
So they're a retirement investment.
Yeah, kind of yeah. They don't take your money. They just give you advice. There's advisors and stuff. I did Facebook Live stuff with them, and I did some cool things where, you know, I did commercials, like I said, and I've done a lot of radio spots. And then I did a cool thing in Minnesota. I got to do a thing with this big radio, old time radio company, The Goat. It was, and they play all this, like Pink Floyd when it was Pink Floyd, you know, before The Wall, before any of that, you know.
And psychedelic stuff. Man.
Yeah, yeah. And it was fun. So that's been good, you know, so I got some time in with that, but it's important, you know, to save for your future and pay attention to your surroundings, environment, your own time. This time being home, I hope people have taken into account of what it takes to live. So when they do retire, you're not just counting on Social Security. You know, you need to create your own pension. Our industry doesn't do it for you.
We're on our own. Absolutely. Yeah.
And we make enough money. We do just fine.
While we're working, we're fine. We live like kings. Yeah.
You know, 40 years straight, never lost a job. Never, there wasn't a year without work. And this is the first time, like my dad said, entertainment's going to be there forever and it will come back. I ain't worried about that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not worried about it either.
But like Jake keeps saying, we don't want to come back too soon because it could, we'll all be coming home.
That's very true. That'll
scare everybody, right? Your boss, my boss is, oh, fuck that. You know, you just shut down, you know, half America, you know.
Yeah. Everybody's playing it safe and it's smart.
Yep. Well, you know, so.
Wise words, man. And, you know, preaching, got to preach. I totally get it.
And I do. And I got a lot. And as you know, and a lot of these guys that are at home, I haven't heard any issues. They got on the programs, get your wife on the program, get everybody on the government programs, get everything you can.
Yeah.
Get it. It's there. You just got to. And they're going, this is hard. And I go, it's hard because you're trying to get money from them.
Yeah, exactly.
You're trying to get money. So just keep filling it out. Well, they denied me. Do it again. And they did. All of a sudden they call, hey, I got the money. You know, and
I'm
like,
yeah. You know what? I really wish I did more research on how to do that because I'll be honest, I've been lucky. I've gotten a little money here and there. I've gotten some PPP for certain artists. You know, I've gotten a little bit of this and that. But you know, you're it's very, very admirable for you to help people and take your crew along the ride with you. And
I didn't know what else to do besides follow the guidelines of what the government's telling me to do. Stay out of the way. When we came home, we stayed home immediately. Our state didn't shut down for 2 weeks until after I got home. It didn't close down. And I said, we're staying home. We're locking down. You're quitting your job. You blah, blah, blah. We're here. We're done. Mm-hmm. We're not moving. And so that's when I started digging into all this stuff and reading into it. And, you know, and I know Charlie's really good at what he does. And Jake's really good at what he does in the sense of giving. And we all have a way, you too, even, you know, how you're going to give, help out? How are you going to help?
And how about Mike Strickland and everything he's done?
Yeah. Oh, I watched him on TV. That was awesome.
So did I. You know? So did I. I get an email from him every day. I'm in that group. Okay. That gets an email from him, just like giving advice and telling him where they are and in negotiations with the government. And he should be sainted in our industry
Totally.
Definitely. Again, thank you so much. But, my favorite words from you, and we've not really toured together, but the words that ring in my ears when I hear from you, and I'm not trying to do an impression, he goes, "Hey, we're just going to make it work."
That's right.
I've heard you say that once. I've heard you say that 100 times. We're just going to make it work. You know, whatever it is, I don't care. I don't care how hard it is. I don't care what it is. We're going to get in there. We're going to go in early, and we're just going to make it work.
Yeah. Don't be afraid of the monster.
Yeah, those are words to live by, you know?
And now you know the real story why you're not there with Guns, didn't do the Guns N' Roses tour. That's what you said. You scared the guy because you're too tall.
Hey, it worked out for the best. Who knows? I might be a still guitar tech if we got the job.
Yeah, exactly. I thought
everything
about that.
Happens for the right reason.
Yes, exactly.
That's cool. Good. Well, best of luck. My best to Simone. Please say hi for me.
Yeah,
because one time Simone came up to me and goes, "You know, Opie's not my favorite production manager. You are."
Oh, there you go. She only had to deal with me on all stuff. She's far mellower than I. So there you go.
Funny. All right. Best of luck to you, man.
All right.
Let's stay in touch.
All right. I gotta do another Zoom now. I got a Cinco de Mayo today. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Oh,
everyone.
Yeah. Have a taco and a beer. Okay, guys.
All right.
See you.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Take care, Opie. Bye.
Yeah, bye.